We continue to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the fourth canto, chapter 1, entitled Genealogical Table of the Daughters of Manu, text number 58. Evam sura ganaistata Bhagavanta vabhistuto Labdavalokeryayatur Arsito Gandamadanam Evam Suraganaistata Bhagavantava Bistuto Labdavalokeryayatur Archito Gandamadanam Evam Suraganaistata Bhagavantava Bistuto Labdavalokeyayatur Archito Gandamadanam. Translation. Maitreya said, O Vidura, thus the demigods worshipped with prayers by the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as the sage Naranarayan. The Lord glanced upon them with mercy and then departed for Gandhamadana Hill. There's no purport. Text 59. Davimovai Bhagavato Hariram Savihagato Bharavyaya Chabhuva Krishna Yadu Kuru Dvaho. That Naranarayan Rishi, who is a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasty of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, respectively, to mitigate the burden of the world. Purport. Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Nara is a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Thus the energy and the energetic together are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maitreya informed Vidura that Nara, the portion of Narayana, had appeared in the family of the Kurus, and that Narayana, the plenary expansion of Krishna, had come as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the purpose of delivering suffering humanity from the pangs of material burdens. In other words, Narayana Rishi was now present in the world in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginnana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Minatasmai Sri Gurve Maha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sigaro Sihutupada Kamalam Sigarun Vaishnavam Stya Sri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sivisakan Vitam Stya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Srimad Bhagavatam is establishing, first of all, the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by opening with a reference to the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadiyasya Yatunvyat Itaratas Chadte Swabhigyaswarat. And immediately it describes the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the nature of Vishnu Tattva. It is explaining that Lord Krishna is the origin of everything, and he is all-pervasive, and in that all-pervasive aspect of his being is all-pervasive, and in that all-pervasive aspect of his being, he is fully conscious of the total cosmic manifestation. His consciousness is all-pervading, and everything is resting upon him, and simultaneously he is Swarat, the independent supreme personality of Godhead. And everything is going on without his direct interference, but simply by his arrangement, by his desire. So it is very interesting to see how the Lord is expanding himself into unlimited forms. Departure eva hida santram abhyupecha dipayate vivritta henu samana dharma yastadrik eva hicha vishnu tayor vibhati govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Like the candle can be lit from another one, and in this way from one original candle so many can be lit. So in Vishnu Tattva, it is interesting because we're seeing how all these separate forms of the Lord are manifesting, and simultaneously we cannot really see them as separate, because after all he remains the Supreme Lord. So even when the Lord appears in his four-armed form, or whether he appears in his two-armed form of Lord Krishna, or whether he appears in the form of Matsya, or in the form of Vamana, or in the form of Varaha as a boar. In all these forms, he is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is abhigya. That quality he doesn't lose. So he is fully aware of past, present and future. He is Trigalagya. Therefore, he is aware of all his previous incarnations. He is aware of all the incarnations yet to come. He is aware of all his powers and experiences like that. So although the forms of the Vishnu Tattva are very separate, and although the pastimes of the Vishnu Tattva are separate, in another way, they're not separate. In another way, it is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, to make the matter a little more complicated, still the powers are different in the various manifestations. And therefore, there are ete, chamsa, kala, pumsa, there are amsa and kala. It is explained there are plenary portions and portions of plenary portions of the Supreme Lord. And accordingly, various powers of the Lord's transcendental potency are invested in the various incarnations. So therefore, Lord Krishna remains unique amongst all the incarnations of the Lord. Therefore, this verse in itself, the verse is very clear. It says that Naranarayan Rishi is a partial expansion of Krishna, who has now appeared in the dynasty. In the purport, if we would just read the line, in other words, Narayana Rishi was now present in the world in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, we might get a little bit confused, thinking that that there's no difference between Krishna and Narayana Rishi. But there is. Lord Krishna is always more potent. There's an example given in this regard about Krishna, who is... it is Vasudev Krishna who is speaking, the one who lives in Dwarka. And Vasudev Krishna in Dwarka is saying, how amazing is it that there is another form of myself residing in Vrindavan, and that form of myself is attracting me to take the female form of a gopi and to perform pastimes with this form. So here it is described how the Lord is attracted to his own form and is attracted to the pastimes, the unlimited pastimes of the Lord. So even the Krishna in Dwarka is bewildered by the Krishna in Vrindavan. So it is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So just see how amazing the nature is of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is even surprised by himself. Krishna is amazed. We see how little Krishna, as a child, is sitting on the lap of Mother Yasoda, and he's holding a mirror. And Mother Yasoda is kind of supporting the mirror with her hand, and Krishna is looking in the mirror. and Mother Yasoda is enjoying this, and Krishna also, because it's not that I am the all-knowing Supreme Lord, so I already know what I'm going to see in this mirror. It's my face. No, rather Krishna himself is surprised by his own unlimited qualities and his own unlimited abilities. For him also, it is a great adventure to explore his various energies and the interaction of his energies. So he's not the all-knowing Lord. Sometimes we discuss this theme, that if Krishna is all-knowing, can you just imagine what it would be like in the spiritual world, that let's go and surprise Krishna, and we have a nice little package with a surprise inside for Krishna, and we go, here, Krishna, that's for you. And Krishna says, oh, I already know what's in the package. I'm all-knowing, you know. Like, I don't even have to bother to open it. I already knew what you were going to put into it before you even thought of it, right? No one can surprise me, right? And that whenever Krishna is not saying that, that it's all false, you know, that he's saying, wow, you brought a gift for me. Oh, what's inside? Just like with Sudama, you know. What are you holding in that little bundle there? He could have said, oh, give me that chip rice that your wife put in the bundle, you know. After all, I'm the all-pervading Lord. I saw it when she put it in. Huh? But the Lord didn't say that, nor did the Lord... Does the Lord necessarily always know? Because it is explained that Lord Krishna, he in the spiritual world, all the pastimes of the Lord are taking place by the influence of Yoga Maya. If there was no Yoga Maya, it was not possible. Because then all the time, the residents of Vrindavan would be standing there with folded hands and, oh, Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is by your causeless mercy only that we exist. And they would be just offering endless prayers. And life would be one big prayer. But in Golok Vrindavan, it is certainly not like that. Because of the Yoga Maya potency, nobody knows who Krishna is. So it is said that not only are the residents of Vrindavan, or of the spiritual world, covered by the Yoga Maya potency, but Krishna even allows himself to be covered by the Yoga Maya potency. He allows Yoga Maya to bewilder himself. Of course, that's only because he allows, because if he doesn't want to be, then he's not. Right? So sometimes, indeed, Krishna knows everything. He knows everything that's going on. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, there is a description of Murari Gupta. And Murari Gupta, as we know, he was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra. And Murari Gupta, one day, he was thinking to himself, he said, I can't tolerate it any longer. He said, just imagine, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is too much. He bewilders my mind. He said, first, he went all the way to Lanka, and fought like anything with Ravana, right? And then finally, after such a big battle in which so many people died and this, that, such a huge battle, he got Sita back after so much trouble, and then he rejected her. He said, I cannot understand this. This is too much. So the result of this was it created a state of bewilderment in his mind, and therefore he decided that there's no point in keeping this body together. I'm going to give up my body. And he had brought a sharp knife. He had brought a sharp knife to his house, and Murari Gupta, he hit that house, that knife in the house somewhere, and then he was thinking, tonight I will finish my life. So that day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and to the house of Murari Gupta after quite some time, and Murari was overwhelmed. He was overwhelmed that the Lord personally came to his home and gave him a darshan, and he fell on the ground and he offered prayers, and he was so happy, and Lord Chaitanya reciprocated and put his lotus foot on the head of Murari, and Murari became even more ecstatic. And then he said, my Lord, everything I have belongs to you. Everything that I possess belongs to you. So then the Lord said, all right then, give me that knife. Right? He said, knife? What you're talking about? He said, Murari, I know everything. Right? I am all-pervading, I know everything. I know exactly where that knife is. Bring it here immediately. Right? And never think of these things again. Right? Never dare even to, for a moment, contemplate these things. Right? So in this way, he saved Murari Gupta. So then we see that he used this abhigya potency right there and then, and that he was indeed aware of everything. But other times Krishna is really not knowing what is happening. That is the interesting thing of Krishna. So in this way, in the spiritual world, it is not so that Krishna is only playing to be an equal partner. He is actually acting as an equal partner. It's not that here is the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead who's just acting as if he has no power. But of course, other times, he is completely the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead who is playing with his devotees. That is the nature of the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, who can understand Krishna? No one can understand Krishna. But Krishna, somehow or other, is certainly also involved. And this is so nice about Krishna consciousness. I have read in some religious books about a god that was seated on a golden throne and some were fanning him and some were offering prayers. And he was always on the receiving end. And that is also kind of oftentimes the concept, that there is God, and yes, he's the all-loving God, and he is giving shelter to all living beings. But in Krishna consciousness, we have a little different conception of the love of the Supreme Lord. We are not only understanding the love as the all-pervading love, which is just kind of like the rays of the sun, equally available to all, and according to the receptivity, one will get a little more than another, right? But basically, it is that same equal love, which is just available everywhere. It is one aspect of the Supreme Lord. But the other aspect of the Lord is very personal. And in the relationship with Lord Krishna, it is like that. It is very personal. In a discussion between Maharaj Yudhisthira and Narada Muni, the point is raised about liberation. And it is explained, mukti dadati bhakti yogasma nakarichit. That I'll give you mukti. Liberation I will give you very easily, but bhakti, that is not so easily available. That I will keep hidden. Prabhupada says, yes, that I keep hidden behind my back. I will not show you. Because by bhakti, I become purchased. Lord Krishna becomes purchased. So this is very nice. It is not only that the devotee becomes emotionally attached to Krishna. And that Krishna consciousness means that how amazing is Krishna? He has beautiful eyes like lotus petals. Imagine that. And little reddish, pinkish, therefore, even more like lotus petals, right? And so forth, head bedecked with peacock feather, playing the flute, and we can go on, threefold bandit form. Everything is quite amazing about Lord Krishna. And he's so merciful, because he fulfills the desire of every living entity. He even doesn't let the living entity rot in the material world, although the living entity wants to rot, right? But rather, he makes so many arrangements to bring him back, endless arrangements. So, how lovable is Krishna? But that's not the most lovable aspect of Krishna. It is very wonderful that Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful. It is very attractive, of course. It is very wonderful that Krishna is so merciful. But what makes him even more lovable is that he loves us too. Because if you love someone, that's very nice. But if that person loves you too, then you love that person even more. The reciprocation, right? Where Krishna loves his devotee, and his devotee loves Krishna, and it is just not clear who loves who the most. This is actually the relationship that is developing between Krishna and his devotee. And therefore, that makes Krishna even more lovable than just being wonderful in all aspects. But it is wonderful that that wonderful personality actually is a very soft-hearted being with feelings who cares about his devotees. And therefore, devotional service is never a mechanical process or never a process of collecting credits. Sometimes I give this example, like we could carry a little book in our pocket, you know, and then we could make marks. Fasted on so many Ekadasi. Okay, that's a tick. You know, fast on Ekadasi, another Ekadasi. I got 17 Ekadasis already, right? How many Govardhan Parikrams you got? Hold on, I just look under the G. Govardhan Parikrams, four. Four full Govardhan Parikramas, not bad. And how many Vrindavan Parikrams? That's on the next page. Yes, 27. Wow, that looks pretty good for you. And then at the end of life, you know, like just then at the gates of Vaikuntha, all right, sorry, we don't think you can enter. Oh, wait a minute, I got my passport. Okay, have you got the visa? Let me see. Not good enough, sorry. Go get a little more, you know, do a few more parikramas. How many rounds of Hare Krishna you chanted this lifetime total? Not so many. Still, chant a few more. I guess you gotta do a few million more names, right? Like this. Oh boy. Anyway. So it's not like that it's like a mechanical process where at the end it's measured how many names have we chanted, how many pious activities have we done. It is simply a fact that Krishna is attracted by devotional service. Rupa Goswami says, Sri Krishna Akarsani. Sri Krishna Akarsani means that devotional service attracts Krishna. So that's the whole thing. Therefore, a devotee is never an ordinary person. Now, we may look at a devotee and we may think, well, he may not be an ordinary person, and I'm sure he's a devotee, but he really behaves like an ordinary person, you know. I mean, look at this person, you know. He's like behaving just like any other gross materialist, you know. He's like not at all behaving like a Vaishnava. I happen to have read, you know, everything about Vaishnava etiquette, and I don't see that this devotee is embodying these qualities at all. Rather, he's just behaving like typical, you know, he gets angry all the time, he's dishonest. I caught him lying so many times, he's just lying to me, you know, like, I mean, what kind of devotee is this? He's lying, outright lying. Can you believe that? Is that a devotee? Right? Lying? And he is having so many other things, you know, like he's greedy like any, and attached to his belongings, like anything, super attached, you know, especially to his computer, you know, right? So attached, like that. Now, where are these devotional qualities, you know? So how can we say that he is a devotee? That must refer to real devotees, right, who are having real qualities. It says you can recognize a devotee by his qualities, the 26 qualities of a devotee and so forth. And he must have those. Otherwise, how is he a devotee? But one cannot necessarily consider like that, because one should know that qualities is one thing. But what is the service that someone has done? What is the service that has been done? Because Krishna sees the service. Krishna never forgets any service done. We forget. We even forget all the service we've done ourselves, and although we remember our own service a little easier than the service of others. But anyway, Krishna remembers everyone's service very easily, all the time. He remembers everything. So, therefore, Krishna feels indebted. So even if we see that this person, well, I don't see many good qualities in him, that might be, but his good quality is his service attitude, that he's doing devotional service for Krishna. And Krishna will never forget. So eventually Krishna will help him to develop all good qualities. And even so, what happens if he has not yet developed all the good qualities of a devotee, but somewhere midstream leaves his body? What happens? You know, what happens then? Does he have to come back and take another birth again to just polish up the diamond a little more, you know, on the rough edges and make sure until finally he is like that perfectly polished diamond, a pure devotee, a Paramahansa, shining and brilliant, effulgent, and completely emanating love of God, and in his presence you can see he's the direct via media of the Supreme Lord, like Prabhupada was so clearly, and everyone can see even now, although he's no longer physically present, everyone's convinced he was, and exactly that's what he was. Like Trivikram Maharaj told me, he said, Prabhupada came down the staircase, and at the bottom of the staircase, he did a little pirouette, put his hands up in the air and said, my spiritual master made me a diamond. And everyone could see, yes, it is true. So, do we have to all become completely perfected before we can go back to the spiritual world? This is a question that may come to mind. I'm soon going to give a seminar on faith in Radhadesh, so I'm kind of doing some little homework for that, and whatever you do in the day, that reflects in your classes, right? So I was thinking I should do one section on the history of faith in ISKCON, right? And of course, I want to find some anecdotes, etc., for that. And I won't spend too much time on it now, but I just want to point out that in the beginning, the devotees, they were like ready to be completely transcendental, completely, right? The material didn't matter, right? Even when I joined, it was pretty much like that. There was one big room and like this, where the brahmacharis slept, and there was a wooden floor exactly like this, and nothing else. There were no lockers. There were no bunk beds. There was nothing. There was just that and some suitcases lined up along the side, and everyone just slept on the floor. There were even no little rubber mats or anything like that, because they hadn't invented those yet. I slept on my coat, and that was considered sense gratification, but I thought, I don't care. It's too cold, you know. I hate cold floors. Anyway, so it was like that. Everyone was... The spirit was transcendental. We think of the first preachers who went to Paris, and they lived under the bridges, just in Paris, under the bridge, together with the clochards, right? Well, I mean, it sounds romantic, but I don't know if it's that romantic. You know, those people have lice, and they steal, and, you know, and God knows what else they have for creeping diseases on their skin, etc., and what lives under those bridges, you know. And you're just not completely sure if you're going to wake up the next morning. Someone might just, in the night, do something with a knife on you. So it is a little rough. But they did. They slept like that. Then later, when the Matajis came, then they got one apartment, but they divided it by hanging a big sheet in the middle, and one side of the sheet was the Mataji ashram, and the other side was the Brahmachari ashram. So life was so simple, and everyone was just living like that, and it was okay. It was okay. Everyone was in this spirit. Let's spread Krishna consciousness. Let's somehow or other do it. This is the mission. And, well, you know, and the mood was, we're all going to go back to Godhead, for sure, this lifetime, right? We're all going to go back to Godhead. So that has changed somewhere along the way, and now we have come to the point where, well, maybe, right? It is theoretically possible. It's not against our philosophy that if somehow or other the Lord would be have a merciful day, you know, like and you would have really be an exceptional devotee, you know, exceptional, somebody like Jayananda or something like that, you know, super exceptional person, that you could possibly go back to Godhead. Although, just remember, don't forget, that even with Jayananda, right, who was absolutely extraordinary, right, who is like Jayananda, huh? And still Prabhupada wrote a letter about him that he might have gone to the heavenly planets. See? Just see. And then he, okay, then when Prabhupada heard that the chanting of Hare Krishna was there at the end of his life, then the second letter Prabhupada said, okay, he must have gone back to Godhead. So, let us face the facts. Let us face the reality. It's practically impossible to go back to Godhead. Right? Very, very difficult. I'm so sorry to bring this news to you all, but probably we're going to have to take another birth. Right? Yes, we're probably going to have to rot longer in the material world. There's little hope for us. You know, we're so fallen, so contaminated. Oh, boy. It's sometimes you wonder, you know, shall I even try? Shall I even try to become purified? Is it even possible? I mean, you know, I'm chanting, but I've done it for so many years, right? And I still feel the same, no taste, and just struggling, and full of material desires, and my mind is always drifting up, off to sense gratification in the most gross form, and no matter what I do, you know, I'll never become a devotee. Oh, boy. Maybe we should all go home, you know. I tell you, I think, I cannot even hold my head up anymore. I'm glad there is this table. I feel so unenlivened in my spiritual life. Right? Anyway, okay. Somewhere along the line, at least the mood changed. Maybe I have made it a little more extreme than reality. There are many varieties of flavors in between these two extremes that are there, but definitely we have shifted in our faith. So how did it happen? We could trace that I want to today. But we could at least say, well, how should we look at this? How should we consider this if we really contemplate this point for a moment? Well, can we go back to Godhead or not? And what are the standards for going back to Godhead? Let us now, once and for all, try to get to the bottom of this, right? So, do you have to be completely 100% pure, right, to enter into the spiritual world? Okay. Anyone wants to say yes or no?
No.
I beg to disagree.
Maybe.
Huh? I beg to disagree. I'll tell you why. Because even the gopis, right? They, when Krishna played his flute, some of the gopis were not allowed out of the house, and their husbands and brothers stood in front of the house with sticks holding them back, and they were not able to exit and meet Krishna. And it says, in that separation of Krishna, they felt so terrible that they burned up in the suffering the last little bit of material contamination, and then they were qualified to go back to the spiritual world. So, they were the gopis that were previously the forest, the sages of the forest of Dandakaranya, and they also were the ones who were on the heavenly planets there, desiring to become, to have that conjugal relationship with Krishna. So they needed that last little bit of purification in a pastime of Krishna, somewhere in a universe, and they had to go through it, through the purification, and then they could go back. They had to be 100% pure to go, to enter into the spiritual world. This is just one example, there are so many examples. So, how can you be impure in the spiritual world? What if you have greed in your heart, and you see all the opulence of the spiritual world? Huh? Will you start putting Krishna's jewels in your pockets, as you're playing with him in the forest? We have to conquer all greed. Yes. So what? How to do this? Yes. So it seems we have to be perfectly pure to enter into the spiritual world. So if you're not, then another birth. No, there's another element. There is another element. And the element is the mercy element of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do you think that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to distribute the process of love of God to the most fallen and give it to everyone, right, for the price of a little bit of faith, you know, practically nothing, even the faith is created by his devotees, right? Lord Chaitanya gives it to those who have a little faith. And those who have no faith, then his pure devotees come to create the faith where it's not. So that everyone can take the mercy, and then it's all so easy. You just have to chant Hare Krishna, and then at the very end, it's almost impossible. So I give you something very cheap, but in the end, it turns out to be like super difficult. You have to perfectly perform your sadhana to go back. No. Even if we are not complete Mahabhagavats, even if we are not completely pure, if we have satisfied Krishna by our service, then he can do the rest. Then at the end of our life, he can, by his mercy, help us to cover the distance and to somehow or other become eligible to go to the spiritual world. An example is the Damodar Leela, the pastime where Mother Yasoda tried to capture Krishna and tie him up, and that, okay, she couldn't, the rope was too short, two fingers short. It was all the time, no more rope, still two fingers short. Then, by her perspiration, by her endeavor, one finger distance was covered. And then one finger distance still remained. But by the mercy of Krishna, that one was also covered. So it is a combination of the two. And the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very great. Therefore, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is pleased with the devotee, with his sincere endeavor, then that is in itself sufficient to attract the mercy of the Lord. Of course, it's not a law. You cannot say, okay, look, you know, I've done so much, so where is it now? No, he may decide. Mercy is independent. Mercy depends on his mood. Right? It depends on his mood. Mercy depends on him also. But because he's very soft-hearted, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After all, it is as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahayanya. And it is known that Sri Mata Radharani is even more soft-hearted than Krishna. So since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Srimata Radharani, he's specifically very soft-hearted. Therefore, there is no doubt that he's very merciful. Very, very soft-hearted, even more than Krishna. So he's even more easier moved than Krishna. Therefore, he will be inclined to be merciful. So this is an important understanding that I personally feel that we need a little bit more of that old-fashioned optimism in our movement. That kind of spirit, we're all gonna go back to Godhead, all together now. Everybody clap your hands and dance for Krishna and let's go. Let's all go back to Godhead, all together now, right? And one of these old-fashioned songs of all together now, some sort of... It seems that if that would be there, then enthusiasm would begin to flourish, and it is enthusiasm, right, that has in the past produced amazing results. It is true enthusiasm that far out things have been done, isn't it? And in fact, many of the facilities, right, that ISKCON has today are the result of incredible enthusiasm. It's like unreasonable enthusiasm. Enthusiasm that wasn't human anymore. Superhuman enthusiasm. Completely spiritual enthusiasm. Which all came forth from great faith. We're all going to go back to Godhead. Just a few more years and we'll be there. Right? And that's how everyone used to think. I remember when I joined, you know, there were some... It's like, he's already 4 years on Sankirtan. Wow. he's so advanced. That's how it was. We had, in the it was in the Benelux, there was one devotee, he was 4 years in Sankirtan, and everyone thought, wow, he's almost a pure devotee, almost. Give it a few more years, you know, a few more years, and then he'll be a pure devotee. Maybe we were a little naive. That might be. But the spirit was nice. The spirit that we're all going to go back to Godhead, that was not naive. That was actually having great faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is very kind, and his intention is to take everybody back to Godhead. And therefore, of all the incarnations of the Lord, that's our incarnation. That's the one for us. That's the one we worship. Therefore, Mayapur, our place of worship, Vrindavan home, Krishna, is naturally we are with Krishna, because Lord Chaitanya worships Krishna. There we feel at home. But specifically, our service is connected to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, somehow or other, we can never disconnect ourselves of the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because if we do so, then we are disconnecting us from the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is available to those who are keeping a close connection with him, and who are trying to fulfill his desire. Because those who try to fulfill his desires attract him the most. So if we want to attract Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we should do what he likes the most. Then he will be attracted the most. And in this way, we have the best chance to get the mercy of the Lord and go back to Godhead. Okay, I'll stop. Any questions or comments? Tapas. Oh.
Now, connection to this, you're speaking about the qualities. We hear, I hear often these things, which I didn't hear before, that often that he decided, non-devotees, so the tellers, they often have much better qualities than devotees. Mm. More respectful, and there's a kind of shift of value.
Yeah.
And it seems that, I don't know, that...
Yeah. I understand what you say. It is difficult to ascertain these things. But let us say that there are people in the material world who may have better qualities than we have. But the verdict of the Shastra, of course, is there in Bhagavatam. Yes, yasti bhakti bhagavati rakinshana sarvir guna istatra samasate sara harava bhaktisho kuto mahat guna manoratena sati davato bahi. It says a devotee will gradually develop all the good qualities automatically, and one who's not a devotee, but who has all good qualities, he is sure to lose them again in due course of time. Then the other thing is that many people are very expert in displaying nice qualities, but it is only skin deep. If you look deeper underneath all the nice qualities, there's a hard-hearted, selfish person. So it is sometimes very difficult to see. It's like I once came to this psychologist, you know, and like, so this man was always like asking the question. He was so equipoised, so balanced, and so peaceful. How are you? Okay. Oh, nice. What have you been doing? It didn't matter what you say, you know, you could say anything to him. Then the standard question would be, did you enjoy it? Anything you would have said to him, you know, I just went in the park and I strangled someone, you know, he'd go, did you enjoy it? The only time he fell out of his role was when he asked me once, how do you feel? And I said, I feel like throwing you out of the window. He said, that's not nice. he said. This is the first, the only time. It's like he lost it. All the time. He never lost it, you know. He had his Jesus, he had his Jesus profile, you know. And he was really expert at it. So there are a lot of people who cut a Jesus profile, you know. Love, you know, love you, I love you, and we love each other, and it's love, 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 love. But underneath, it's not all love. I've also, I was with Jayadvaita Maharaj, my spiritual master, in London, and we once visited the center of a particular religious group, I once said, of the Vyasasam, which group it was. But anyway, we saw their center, and they first showed us how everywhere they're erecting beautiful Kingdom of God halls. They had a slideshow of that. And then the next thing was they showed us their printing presses, right? And then the whole mood amongst them was the brothers and the sisters. And how the brothers are taking care of the sisters and the sisters of the brothers and the brothers of the brothers and the sisters of the sisters. And how everyone cares so much. So next to every door there is a bandage dog box, you know. Because you never know if someone's hand gets caught and then we can put a bandage, right? That's very nice. And yes, and here is the carpenter workshop. And the brothers and the sisters, they make very nice folding beds for their brothers and their sisters so that they can peacefully receive guests and their folding beds and the rooms look nice. And in this way, the brothers and sisters care so much for each other. And let's now go to the basement. And here in the basement, we saw huge washing machines. We'd never in our life seen such big washing machines, you know, as high to the ceiling, monsters of washing machines. And they had never seen so much laundry. And this is all the laundry of your brothers and your sisters, because admit it, you hate it too, right? What you hate most? Washing, isn't it? Well, we take care of our brothers and sisters. You do not have to bother of these things. And we put all the clothes of all our brothers and sisters in little nets with labels on them so they don't get lost. And in this way, everything is nicely taken care. And it is sure that everyone gets his clothes back. Oh, wow, very impressive. So we were walking at all this, and what a waste of time. What are we doing here? And then we were just walking to the corner of the basement, and there was a little corridor, and we went into this little corridor, and suddenly the tour guide said, "No, no, 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 not in there, not in there." And we looked, you know, like, "What's in there?" Right? He said, "No, no, 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 not in there." We said, "What's in there?" He said, "That's the butchery." "The butchery?" So a giant regiment said, "Oh, the brothers and sisters do it themselves." And the man said, "Well, yes, it's perfectly all right. You know, God said in Noah's Ark, you know, that it was perfectly allowed. And anyway, once when heaven comes on earth, then all this will not be required anymore." And Maharaj said, "We don't need it now." You know, the man was like, anyway, this is the end of the tour, you know. So he took us up the stairs. And he said, while walking, he said, "Anyway, some of us are vegetarians, you know." Said, and again, Maharaj said, "We don't need it now." And it's like, so here we had the loving qualities of the brothers and the sisters and a little Auschwitz in the basement, right? Where you can just imagine, you know, after a whole day, "Oh, my brother, oh, my sister, oh, yes," and then and then you're in the basement, "And this is for you, brother." Finally, let it all out, right? So what kind of good qualities are there? So we should be careful in just seeing so many. Real good qualities are not easily realized in a person who does not have love of God, because somewhere along the line he is selfish. Somewhere along the line there is selfishness within him. So all his good qualities are the covering of egoism. Therefore, considering that, we do want to give credit where credit is, but on the other hand, we should also not become naive and say, "Oh, so many good qualities out there." We should not worry so much. The qualities will follow. The qualities will follow. In Kali Yuga, we are not expected to develop all the qualities of the residents of the previous yugas. It's just not possible. It's just not possible. The Kali Yuga devotees, they are still a little bit under the influence of Kali. Isn't it? There's a little story when I heard it here, actually, in Stockholm from Smita Krishna Maharaj. I don't know exactly. He says he heard it also, and so I don't know where it came from. But the story is that Yudhisthira was in the palace, and there was a man, a landowner, and a man who worked on the field, and they had an argument, and they came before the king. And the man who worked on the field, he had found some gold in the land of the owner. Can you imagine? Good cause for a fight. Yes, what was the fight all about? The fight was like this. The man who worked on the field said that, "I found this gold, sir, and it was in your land, therefore you must take it." The owner said, "No way, I can't take it. You found it, you take it." This was their fight. And so they had this big fight, and Yudhisthira tried to solve it, and Narada Muni came, and then Narada said, "And now see what happens when Kali enters." And Kali entered the room, and suddenly it changed around, and the man who had worked on the field, he said, "It's my gold. I found it." The owner said, "It was my land. It's my gold." Right. So this contamination of the qualities of Kali is very, very deep. And we may still have a touch of that. But I don't know if Krishna will make such a problem of that if we sincerely try to serve him. So therefore, we may see that some devotee has a touch of that, but that on the other hand, he's very attached to doing service for Krishna, and that for that attachment to the service, that Krishna will give him the mercy, and at the very end of his life, take away that little contamination and take him back.
I was just thinking about, because in the 12th chapter, Krishna lists these qualities which are dear to him, but in the last verse he says, "But those who follow his path," simply that, they also are very dear, just by following
him. Yes.
Yes.
So I'm not speaking against qualities, I'm speaking in favor of qualities, and I also think that we should not be so proud that we are the devotees and they are the demons, you know, and we cannot learn anything from anybody anymore because we are now devotees. That's ridiculous. But on the other hand, I think we should also not make everything out of qualities. Still more important than qualities is service. Any other question? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Kidai.